Holic. Yes. The view up here is fantastic. Alcoholics Anonymous is alive and well in Winnipeg. Thanks for having me. Thanks for inviting me here. I love the spirit of Canadians. I was walking down the hallway the other day mentioning the temperature to somebody, and the gentleman said, "Well, at least there's no mosquitoes out today." So. It's a nice positive attitude. You have smart water in Canada? I haven't seen any. I haven't been to a grocery store, but I brought this bottle with me from California. It's called Smart Water. I always bring one with me because I'm hoping it helps my talk a little bit. The first time I ran across this, I couldn't get the lid open. It had some kind of really difficult lid. It's like, I guess you have to drink it first to get smart. I'm not sure, but I had one of my sponsees open it for me. Anybody have sponsees? Just show of hands. People have sponsees? Excellent. How about people have sponsees that are here with them? Excellent, excellent. I try not to never leave home without a sponsee, but I didn't bring one on this trip, but I always try to bring one with me. They're just awesome. Love sponsees. They're fabulous. A couple of months ago, I was traveling to a conference, and I missed one of my connections, and I was concerned that I wasn't going to be able to get to my destination in time, and I texted my host to ask him for some counsel of what I should do. I don't know what to do because I was not going to get there when I was supposed to get there, and I knew I was going to a good AA group when the guy texted me back. He says, read page 449 and go to a meeting. So that's two secrets of AA. I've only been talking for a couple minutes. You want to stay sober? Intensively work with another alcoholic. And if you have a problem, the solution is always spiritual. So if you doze off, at least you got something to take with you there. If you get done listening before I get done talking, that happens sometimes. But I got thinking about this smart water a little while ago, and I was looking back at my drinking, and I thought, boy, it sure would be nice if whiskey had different kind of labels on it. So when you went to the liquor store, you knew what kind of whiskey you were going to get. Instead of now, you go, you don't know what you're going to get when you drink this stuff. I mean, you might get Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde whiskey. You might get puking and going to jail whiskey. I used to get some of this dialing whiskey where you call people up in the middle of the night, don't want to hear you. Sometimes I get this stuff called traveling whiskey, where you wake up at some strange place with some strange people. And you ever done that where you wake up and you kind of want to chew your arm off because you want to get away from where you are? It's like, I thought I was a girl. I'm jumping ahead a little bit. That's fifth step stuff. But I did not have sex with that girl. Okay. I think. The stuff that I really like, or you get, sometimes once in a while you get a bottle of smart whiskey where you go home and you start analyzing some problem you have and start taking some notes and you solve all the problems in the world and you wake up the next day and you can't read any of it. But the stuff I really like is called, I call it plucking whiskey, where there's a story in the back of the book where this guy's standing at a bar and all of a sudden he's magically plucked from the bar and thrust into some position of power and prestige. I drank a lot of that stuff. I love that stuff. I lived in this fantasy world all the time. So that describes my drinking. I'm a puking, going to jail, traveling, dialing, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, a guy that thought whiskey made him smart. So that covers it. The other thing I like doing besides drinking is I like thinking. And I like doing them together, thinking and drinking. Drinking and thinking and thinking and drinking and drinking and thinking. And Einstein has a saying I like. He says, none of your current problems can be solved by the thinking that created them. I can't solve my problems by thinking about them. I was in a meeting last week, I think it was, and somebody was, the topic, it might have been our thinking, and someone said they had this like hamster cage in their head. I'm thinking that would be really good. I got a shit slinging monkey in my head. I may not walk my talk, but I'm glad I don't walk my think. Have you seen these 20 questions for whether you're alcoholic or not? Most people have run across them. You can take those same 20 questions and use them for your thinking. Is thinking causing you problems at home? Do you have trouble sleeping because of your thinking? Would your life be better off if you stopped thinking? Yeah. You can see why a guy like me needs a sponsor. I got a sponsor. His name is Jack. And Jack teaches at an air traffic control school. And until recently, I worked at a place called the Department of Corrections. I worked in a prison as a teacher. So control and corrections. Jack and I have issues. But there's a saying also in A is to be nice to the newcomer. Maybe your sponsor someday. And I was nice to Jack when he got sober, and he's my sponsor now. He's my second sponsor. My first sponsor, I didn't know this was going to cause a controversy, but I had a woman sponsor the first time. And she was my sponsor for 18 years. And she was a heavy smoker, and she died of lung cancer. And one of the last things she said to me before she died is, "Sobriety is no fun when you can't breathe." And so after Donna died, I got Jack as a sponsor. So a lot of people in AA, they brag about how much time their sponsor has. My sponsor, he sponsored Moses. But what I like to brag about Jack is what a great program he works. He's a fabulous example of Alcoholics Anonymous. His life's not perfect, but he applies these principles in his life. And the best sermon is a good example, and Jack is an awesome example for me. Abe Lincoln has a quote that I like. He says, "It doesn't matter how tall your grandpa was, you have to do your own growing." So, one of the best examples I heard of why it's a good idea to have a sponsor, some newcomer was at the meeting outside, and somebody asked him how long he'd been sober, or what his sobriety date was. And the guy says, "Which one?" And he says, "I haven't had meth for about 3 years. So I got 3 years off meth. And I haven't smoked a joint since I was in Mexico about 6 months ago. So I got 6 months off pot. And I haven't had a drink for 90 days. But I had a beer last night, so I guess I have 89 days today." It's called newcomer math. So I only have one sobriety date. It's the only one I've ever had. It's December the 6th, 1982. And thanks. Clapping for an alcoholic who quits drinking is like clapping for a cowboy with hemorrhoids who stops riding his horse. Yeah. And my sobriety date is the last time I smoked marijuana. We got any marijuana smokers here? We got any ex-marijuana smokers. Okay. If you're new here, we don't smoke marijuana in Alcoholics Anonymous. We don't do that. And the people that do that aren't sober. I was smoking marijuana because I had a problem with alcohol. I got to a point in my life where I could clearly see that alcohol was causing me some problems, and I didn't like the problems. And I wanted to quit drinking. Maybe what I really wanted to do is I wanted to quit having the consequences of drinking. I'm not so sure I wanted to quit drinking, but I didn't want the consequences of drinking anymore. And I hadn't found you yet, so the best idea I could come up with is I'm going to smoke marijuana because my problem is alcohol. So I started doing that. And I'd quit a lot of times before, but this one particular time I was able to stop drinking. I was a gardener, and I had a really nice patch of marijuana growing, and I had shopping bags full of this stuff, and I quit drinking. And I thought I was okay because I thought my problem was alcohol. So I went on my way. I stayed stoned all the time. Before I got out of bed in the morning, I was smoking marijuana. Non-addictively. And during this time that I was not drinking, my sister came to AA. Because we have a family disease called alcoholism, and she has it, and she came to AA. And I was not drinking. And I kept bragging to her that I was not drinking. I'd take a bunch of Visine in my eyes, and you know, I'd go see her and tell her how good I was doing. And she just kept saying, why don't you come to AA? Why don't you come check it out? And this is what she told me about AA. She says, you like the people, and the people will like you. Wow, she nailed it for me. She didn't talk to me about God or steps or principles or sponsorship or any of that kind of stuff. She told me about you. She told me that I would like you, and more importantly, that you would like me. I had no idea how lonely I was when I got here. I was so empty. And it took a long time for me to realize that until I started to get filled up by being with you. So I arrive at AA quite a while after my last drink, over a year after my last drink. And I came to the meetings. I introduced myself as an existentialist. We got any of those? Yeah. I was an alcoholic. I wasn't even drinking. And I kept coming to the meetings. It didn't occur to me to ask myself, why is someone who's not an alcoholic coming to the meetings? But I kept coming to the meetings. And I'm so happy and grateful that there was no sign in any of the clubs that I went to where it said you had to be an alcoholic to be there. I had a desire not to drink. I did have that. And I knew marijuana counted, so I was clean and sober. But I didn't want to be alcoholic. Oh, that's like, I couldn't even say the word. Two words I couldn't say, alcoholic or God. Those words would not come through my throat. But there was something going on at the meetings that I had no defense against, and it was the love that I felt. It was like a magnet. I kept wanting to be with you because I felt love. Maybe for the first time in my life I felt love. So I kept coming back and kept coming back, and I was listening. I wasn't agreeing with a lot of things, but I was listening. And what happened for me is I ended up catching alcoholism from you. It's like, this is a contagious disease. If there's anybody here not alcoholic today, don't sit next to me because I'll try to give you a case of it because that's where I caught it. I remember when I finally raised my hand and said I was alcoholic, they said, well, it's finally unanimous. Everybody else already knew about it. But you know, I've heard someone say that you can't change something you can't name. I knew there was something wrong with me. I was broken somehow. There was something not right in the way I was living my life. I used to like to get a bottle of scotch, a carton of Marlboro, and a self-help book. And I was trying to figure out what was wrong with me. Well, I come to AA, and there's a name for what's wrong with me. It's called alcoholism. I have alcoholism. I didn't want it. I didn't ask for it, but I have it. And this is like what Dave read. That's the prescription for the treatment of alcoholism. That's what I have. So I need to be with you so I can treat my alcoholism. I'm so glad that I was able to listen when I got here. I met a guy in our area who came in and out of AA, just could not hear what was going on. And one time he's out drinking and he comes out of a blackout. He's in the back of this bar in the alley, and he wakes up and there's a wino pissing in his ear, and he could hear just fine after that. So it takes what it takes. So I get to AA, and I think, who? I got a guy that I sponsor. I said the last thing I did, I have alcoholism, but the last drug I took was marijuana. I sponsor a guy whose sobriety date is the last time he did nutmeg. Now, when you do something like that, you get a name in AA. His name is Nutmeg Steve. And I started meeting all these characters. Like there was a guy named Machine Gun Tony and Boxcar Bill and SWAT Team Ron and Dumpster Don and Booger John and Pee Bed Ed. Said, these people are going to help me? I like, hello? I don't think so. And then I started hearing all the things that people did to try to control and enjoy their drinking. people get married to help them with the drinking, or they get divorced, or they join the army. Or I did something called rebirthing one time, where people go to Esther, or Dianetics, or Oprah, or Chopra, or... it's amazing. I sponsor another guy. You can't make this stuff up. He joined Amway to help him with his drinking. He somehow thought that was going to help, you know. So I'm going to AA. Somebody says to me, you have an allergy. You have to go to meetings the rest of your life. I think, really? I'm thinking, my dad had an allergy to bananas. I never saw him eat a banana his whole life. He didn't go to BA. There's no such thing called Bananas Anonymous. The reason is bananas didn't talk to him. He just quit eating bananas. Alcohol talks to me. Maybe it talks to you, or it used to talk to you. Oh, come on, sweetheart. Let's have a drink. It's going to be so wonderful. Oh, your team lost. Your team won. It's Sunday. I mean, it's like it's always chattering with me. I loved alcohol when I started drinking. I'd still be a virgin if it wasn't for alcohol. Anybody else relate to that? And it starts off that way, but it ended up, in the end, it says, alcohol said to me, get in the car, bitch. And I got in the car. I did what alcohol told me to do. And bananas don't do that to people. So... so I'm going to meetings, and this old-timer comes up to me. You know how old-timers are. Hey, kid. And kind of pokes you in the chest. I was a 39-year-old bachelor. I wasn't a kid. And, he pokes me in the chest and says, you got a God in your life, kid? I said, nah, I don't really believe in God. You reading a book? I don't really like that book. I don't even know Mr. Brown. You're working the steps? I don't want your 12 commandments, thank you very much. You got a sponsor? Nah, I got it. I'll take care of it from here. You meditating? Nah, my head's too busy for that. Then he asked me the kicker. He says, well, how you doing? Well, I wasn't doing too good. I'd had a period of not drinking and not doing drugs, but I hadn't worked the program yet. There's only a window of opportunity that I can see. If you don't do something, not drinking is not going to be fun anymore. And you're going to either drink or do something else that's blow your brains out or something like that. And I got to thinking to myself, I wonder if I can do this. I wonder if I'm capable of doing this program. And I looked back at my drinking, and I thought, I can follow a path. I know how to do that. I had a rut back and forth to the liquor store. I know how to completely give myself to something. I completely gave myself to alcohol. I had a higher power. It was alcohol. I never went into the liquor store, read the labels, walked out and say alcohol doesn't work. I drank it. You have to drink alcohol for it to work. And just like that in AA, you have to do this for it to work. If you're here now and you haven't worked this program and you go back and go to the bartender and say that AA doesn't work, please don't do that because you don't know if it works or not because you haven't worked it. I also understood that I can't get drunk on yesterday's alcohol. I have to drink today to get drunk today. And sobriety is the same thing. I've got to do something today to stay sober today. So I thought, I can do this. I can, and I also had a feeling that you weren't all lying to me at the same time. Your life was way better as a result of the work that you did here, and I thought, I want that in my life. We say, if you want what we have, and when I first got here, it was like, well, I told you some of the names of the people. I said, well, what do you have, And I realized pretty quickly, well, you don't drink. That's pretty special for an alcoholic. And then I was here a little longer, and I realized not only you don't drink, but you like not drinking. You're happy not drinking. That's a big step from just not drinking. And then I was here a little bit longer, and I realized what you really have is relieve me of the bondage of self. That's the magic of AA. And I wanted that because I was all wrapped up in my stuff. So I'm here about, I don't know, remember the timeline, maybe 6 months or so. And my sister suggested I go see this man named Howard, who was a counselor in Sacramento where I was living. I go to see Howard. He's a member of AA, and he's a family practitioner. And for an hour, I told Howard the truth. I'd never done that before in my life to anybody. I'd been to psychiatrists. I'd been to shrinks on occasion. I'd lied to them, paid them the money, left. Nothing changed. Somebody told me once that alcoholics really should go to veterinarians. They're used to guessing what's wrong with their patients. So I snot-cried in Howard's office for an hour telling him the truth about myself. I described my drinking as very sleazy. I had a lot of shame, a lot of guilt, a lot of secrets. I had a double life. I had wore a tie in the daytime, and I drank in places where your feet stick to the floor at night. And I didn't want people to know who I was or what I was, and I moved around a lot. And so I told Howard the truth about myself. And at the end of the hour, he got out a piece of paper, and he wrote, prescription, get on your knees and pray. And he gave me that, and I gave him $50. It was like a $50 fifth step with no fourth step. And I started to do that. Didn't even believe in God. But I said, God, what do you want me to do? And give me the power to do it. And at night I'd say, thank you. And Howard gave me a number of a woman who gave me a number of another woman who was Donna. And I called Donna on the phone and asked her to be my sponsor and never had met her before. And I agreed to work the steps, a journal in a book, and read my journal to her once a week, and go to at least four meetings a week. And I agreed to do that. And about the same time, I bought a new car. My life was starting to get a little bit better. I had an alcoholic truck prior to that. I saw one yesterday here in Winnipeg. A crack windshield, door panels a different color, bumps all over, tires are bald, springs popping through the seat. Somebody else's tags on the back. Just a piece of junk truck. And one of the reasons I believe that I was so lonely is because I would not have wanted to go out with a woman who would have gotten in that truck. It's like, I think Groucho Marx, somebody said, I would not want to belong to a club that would have me as a member. It's kind of the same thing. So I have this new car, and I called it my sobriety car because it was a gift of me being sober. And I started to go to a lot of meetings. I was trolling. I wanted to have a date and because I was so lonely. And I don't know if anybody's planning on using AA as a dating service. I'll say the odds are very good, but the goods are very odd. So I started meeting with my sponsor, and there's little numbers on the steps for people that went to college, I guess. So I went back, and I started going over my life, and I looked at my drinking. And it was real clear to me, when I took a drink, I couldn't stop. And when I wasn't drinking, I forgot that or didn't understand that. And one experiment that I had that really resonated with me is one time, I didn't want to be alcoholic, so I'd have these experiments once in a while to prove to myself that I wasn't an alcoholic. So one of my better ones was I decided to quit drinking for 30 days. An alcoholic couldn't do that, I thought. I don't know what an alcoholic was, but I thought they couldn't do that. So I quit drinking for 30 days. And at the end of 30 days, I had a glass of wine to celebrate not drinking for 30 days at noon. And I was in jail at midnight that night. That's powerless over alcohol. I don't have the power over alcohol. But there's a second part to step one. I call it step one part B, that my life is unmanageable. And I think a lot of the reason my life is unmanageable is because I couldn't accept that I was powerless over alcohol. I'm not a good manager of my own life. I need some power in my life to manage my life because I screwed it up. And I found that power in AA. And my life looks manageable today because I'm not managing it. But one of the things that I do that helps me to remind myself of that is I don't ask the question why. Why is a management question? Why, for me, is asking for an argument with God. I don't want to argue with God. So what I do, rather than ask myself why, I ask myself, what am I going to do about it? Not why am I alcoholic. That's a bad question. The question is, what am I going to do about it? That's a good question, because I can get into the solution that way. Because when I'm fighting reality, if I have a problem nowadays, which I rarely do, I mean like a real problem, it's almost always step one, part B, where I think I'm the manager. Something's going on in my life that I don't like, and I want it to be different than it is. That means I'm fighting reality. If I fight reality, I lose, but only 100% of the time. So I try to stop doing that. Step two, we all have stories, crazy stories of stuff we've done when we were drinking. And I've got a few, I'm sure you've got a few. But what I realized about step two was the craziest thing I ever did, I did sober. I picked up another drink. For a guy like me to pick up a drink, I'd have to be crazy to do that. So that for me is step two. I've been restored to sanity. I worked in a prison for 15 years as a teacher, and it was a men's prison. There were 6,000 men in this prison. It's like a city. It was a huge place. And I asked my students over the 15 years that I worked there if they'd ever been in AA. And guess what? Probably 80% of them had been in AA, maybe more. Most people in prison have been to AA. They certainly know about AA. Then I asked him another question after that. I said, were you ever in AA and had a sponsor in AA and worked the steps in AA and had service commitments in AA? And during that time that I was in the prison, I probably had 20, 25 guys that said yes to those questions. Every one of them, every single one of them told me it was the best time of their life. It was the best years of their life. Well, then I asked him, what are you doing in prison? What was the answer? They stopped going to meetings. So for me, I go to meetings so I won't go crazy. Because people that stop going to the meetings go crazy, and then they drink again. And also, when I go to meetings, I get to find out what happens when people don't go to the meetings. They go crazy. So I stay in the meetings so I don't go crazy. I get to step three, and I'm thinking, I go to my sponsor and say, well, this is as far as I can go. I don't believe in God. I was saying a prayer, but I still didn't believe in God. And I said to my sponsor, this AA is just full of contradictions. This doesn't make any sense at all. And she says, what are you talking about? I said, well, you know, in the literature, I read something about the problem of the alcoholic is in his mind. I go to a meeting, and there's a sign on the wall that says, think, think, think. So, somebody else says, one of the indispensables of recovery is honesty. Someone else says, fake it till you make it. Someone says you have to give it away to keep it. That doesn't make any sense. Tell it to your bank manager. I got some friends in the military who say, you know, you got to surrender to win. What? People say if you don't remember your last drink, you haven't had it. The book says you can't remember the degradation and suffering from a couple of weeks ago. Taking a trip, not taking a trip. Recovered, recovering. We're not bad people trying to get good. We're sick people trying to get well. Why do we have to do a moral inventory? People with cancer don't have to do a moral inventory. Don't make any major decisions the first year. But turn your will and your life over to the care of God, as you understand. That's a major decision. Don't get in a relationship the first year, but get a sponsor and tell them all your shit. God couldn't, would if he were sought. On the page prior to that, it says, may you find him now. Do you have to find him, or can you just look for him? Alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. There is one who has all power. That one is God. Well, if God has all the power, how could alcohol have the power? That's the kind of stuff I think about. It's like, I'd rather argue about something than do anything. And there's a line in the literature about resigning from the debating society. I had to do that. I had to resign from the debating society. My favorite one is half measures avail us nothing. You'll be amazed before you're halfway through. So my sponsor says to me, well, maybe there's some... Are there any contradictions in your life, she asked me. And I get to thinking about that. And I just graduated from UCLA, and I was on a trip to Europe, and I'd saved a little bit of money. sold my motorcycle, went to Europe, and ran out of money pretty quickly. And I wired, a friend had wired me $200. I was just outside of Munich someplace. I got the money at noon. I woke up the next morning and the money was gone. And I was going to say, I don't know what happened, but I know what happened. I got drunk. And I guess I played the big shot. I could have lasted a couple of months on that money. And I got to thinking, you know, there's a line in the literature about it, in a lot of ways we're normal, except when it comes to drinking. And I'm thinking, yeah, I've never gone into a grocery store and say, hey, can I buy everybody a loaf of bread? So what I decided to do, and this is key for me, this is critical for me. I decided to let AA change me rather than me try to change AA. I had always wanted to change outside circumstances. I never dawned on me to change myself or to work to change myself or to ask for help to change myself. And that's for step three for me was a decision. The word decision was key for me. I decided to work the AA program. Still didn't really have this clear understanding of this higher power, but I plugged into the power. It's like in my kitchen. I've got a toaster and a microwave and a stove and a refrigerator and coffee maker and all those kind of things. And none of that stuff works without the power. You have to plug it into the power. You don't have to understand electricity to use electricity. You just plug into it and it works. And AA is the same way. We have a power here that you plug into and it works. So I made a decision to do that. And then I launched on this, launch is really too strong of a word, I started fiddle-fatting around and working the steps. And I got to four. I didn't have a lot of resentments that I knew of, but I had a lot of hate in my heart for my father. I hated my father. He was a drunk. He was a mean drunk. And it was a period of maybe 6 or 7 years where I wouldn't even talk to him if I saw him. And I put his name at the top of a piece of paper, and I started to write about the pain that I felt as a child. And I started to cry and sob, and I called my sister and talked to her about some things that had happened. And I called in the sick to work that day, and I just spent the whole day just kind of sobbing and writing and talking and crying. And something happened that day. Something inside of me melted away about my animosity towards him. And I could see him spiritually, he was a sick man. And something healed for me that day. And I did a fears list. It was longer than I thought it was. I didn't realize I had fears. I had women on that list. I was afraid of women. Maybe that's why I was a bachelor at 39. I was certainly afraid of being intimate with anybody. And I had God on that list. And those relationships are difficult when they're based on fear. And I had I did my sexual inventory. It was, as I mentioned, it was pretty sleazy. But I didn't leave anything off. I was as honest as I could be. And that, to me, is the key to the fourth step. Is I didn't purposely leave anything off of it. I go to do my fifth step. It's kind of a rainy day in November. My sponsor notices a lot of trash on the street where we're going out to where I used to grow pot, where we're going to do my fifth step. And I do the fifth step. And it was like my life had been a garbage can, and I just kind of tipped this garbage can out. And on the way back, we saw a rainbow. And it touched me deeply that I thought I had thrown my life away. And I shared it with another human being, and I see a rainbow. And there's some wonderful promises in the book. I think they're on page 75 of the fifth step. Those things happened to me. I felt I was excited about my sobriety that day. I felt like I was starting to have a relationship with the Creator. And I was doing what you did. I became a member by being willing to do some stuff that was very scary and difficult for me to do. But I wanted what you had. Six and seven, very deceptive. A couple little paragraphs there. That, oh, this is easy. Well, about that same time, all that trolling I was doing was successful, and I met a woman named Betty, and we got married. And we had a little AA marriage. And when we were dating, my idea of a date was to go to a meeting someplace. And it's about the best I could do. And I'd be walking her to her door, holding her hand after going out with her, and I didn't know whether to kiss her or say the Lord's Prayer. So, Betty had a couple of children, Angela, 7, Sean, 13. I married Betty, and I got to be a husband and a father on the same day, stepfather. And she had a sister and a couple of kids, and I got to be an uncle. I didn't know how to do any of those things. And I was working this program, and I'm taking inventories, and I'm getting in relationships with people, and I find out what I believe is my main character defect, and I call it fault finding. I'm a fault finder. You're going to do things that I don't think are right. I'm going to point them out to you, and I'm going to push you out of my life. I've done that my whole life. My best thinking just prior to getting sober was in this place where I was growing pot. I wanted to put a big barbed wire fence around it to keep the teenagers away from my pot and just have some brewer's yeast and some vitamin C and a bunch of cheap wine and all these bags of marijuana and just give myself to my addiction. And I realized that in America, the worst punishment we have is called solitary confinement. I did that to myself in my disease. That's where I put myself because I'd pushed everybody away. So now I'm married and I'm a stepdad and I don't want to be that person anymore. I want to learn how to do this. But I find fault in everything. I have this, I don't know if it's a gift or a curse, but I think I know how to do everything. I know the internationally accepted standard way to do everything. And I'm going to tell you, nobody can do it right. I'm not much fun to be around because I find fault with everything. So I'm learning to be in relationships. So one of the things that I decided to do in the interest of harmony is I decided to do the dishes myself because nobody was doing the dishes right. So, I like to garden, so my hands are dirty. So it was a good thing for me to do, to get my hands clean and have some peace in the family. But I wanted to just do the dishes. I didn't want to do them with anger or resentment. Sometimes I just have to stand at the sink for several minutes sometimes just to get calm enough to just do the dishes. Just doing the dishes is actually very spiritual. There's a lot of things to be grateful for when you're doing the dishes. I read someplace a little while ago, there's over 60 ways to do the dishes. I thought there was only one, and it was my way. And I started learning from you the way you treated me when I came to you. And I started treating my family that way. I started treating them like newcomers. I started treating my children like newcomers. I stopped criticizing them. I made an effort to stop criticizing them and to finding fault with everything they're doing. If their room was messy, I closed the door. My daughter had this Dalmatian, which was like a dog from hell. And it was like sometimes I'd come home, and as the closer I got to home, the madder I would get. And I'd be so mad by the time I got in my driveway, I'd have to turn around and go to my sponsor's house. I couldn't even walk in the house. I was so mad. And just to step over it. And I started writing notes to Angela about how wonderful a wonderful daughter she was and how happy that I got to be her dad and just what a neat kid she was. And I just started loving her. Many, many years later, she came to me and asked me to walk her down the aisle. You gave me that. I don't know how to do that. I'm a fault finder. I push people away from me. Her dad, her biological father, came up to me at the wedding and thanked me for raising his daughter. I got to write the checks for that wedding, too. I was happy to do that. I was grateful to do that. I had a good job. You taught me how to have a good job, show up to work every day, give 8 hours of pay, 8 hours of work for 8 hours of pay. I was happy to do that. Sean didn't know it at the time, but he was 13, and he was just starting off in his disease. And we had a little AA house, and he'd sneak in out of the window, and he was getting going with his disease. And around just before I had 5 years sober, he borrowed my sobriety car, which he had my wife's permission. And he got drunk and smashed it and almost killed his passenger. His passenger was in a coma for a week. And I was not very spiritual about that. He's like, how dare he ruin my sobriety car? And I was mad. And we had some Al-Anons that made a house call where we live. And this woman from Al-Anon said, well, maybe it's Sean's sobriety car. Wow. That was his last drink. He got sober when he was 17. Just celebrated 25 years of sobriety. Yeah. He's a civil engineer, lives in North Carolina, and he was on his way. He called me on his sobriety birthday to thank him for his sobriety car, because it's his car, not mine. And he was going pheasant hunting in North Dakota. I mean, what a good life. You know, this disease is progressive, but recovery is progressive too. Betty and I believe that we were better parents than we parented better than our parents did, and I can see that Sean is a better parent than we are, and my daughter Angela is also a better parent. I have 5 grandchildren, and Sean met a girl who got sober when she was 16, and they both have master's degrees, and they're both sober over 20 years, and so recovery is progressive as well. Step 8 was pretty easy. I just made a list. I'd moved around a lot. There's a lot of people. I don't know who they are or where they are, but I'm certainly willing to set their record straight if I can. I think the people that I hurt the most were my mom and my dad. I have a couple sisters, but I don't think that I did a lot of damage in my relationship with them. My mother particularly. I mean, I was a neat kid. I could have been a contender. As a little kid, I had just a lot of life in me, and it just... Alcohol just cut me off of the knees. It gave me wings, and then it took the sky away. And I got to be a good son to my mom. And my mom died the same when I had 5 years of sobriety. My mother died that year. Sean smashed my sobriety car and almost killed somebody. And my Betty's sister was killed in a car accident. One of her children was paralyzed. All that happened within a 6-month period when I had 5 years of sobriety. But I was in the middle of AA then. I was right in the middle. And you just surrounded yourself with me and loved me and got me through that. And I'm so thankful for that. My dad, he was in a period of his life where he wasn't doing too well, and I invited him to come and live with me. He moved into my house. I would have let him stay forever. He was welcome to stay forever. He was there for maybe 3 weeks. He got mad at something somebody said, and he says, "I'm out of here." And he died a very lonely man. He was a fault finder. He just died a very lonely man. But the amends that touched me the most are, I think, there were a couple of financial amends. One was really kind of silly. One was for $10, one was for $5. The $10 amend, I had gotten too much change in a restaurant one day where I went to. I was secretary of a step-study meeting, and we used to go to this restaurant for lunch, and I got $10 too much one time, and I just put it in my pocket and think, "You can't count, it's not my problem." A couple weeks later, the woman said she was selling the place, and I think, I got to give the money back. I'm trying to live this more spiritual life with principles, and I need to give the money back. And I asked if I could talk to her, took her aside, and said, "I got too much money the other day. I want to pay it back." And she said, "Are you sure?" And I started to cry. I was a macho guy in a restaurant, and oh, man, it was the best $10 high I ever had. It really helped me pay the IRS back. Took a little longer for that. The $5 amend, Sean moved away to school. He went to San Diego State. And he calls me up about 2 years after this car accident and told me he'd been stealing money from me and he wanted to pay it back. And I had been a waiter then, and I had a jar of coins. I used to throw the coins in this jar. And I looked in the jar, and it was like all nickels and pennies. He'd taken all the quarters and dimes out of it and was buying pot or whatever, and he wanted to pay me back. And I got so excited about that because, you know, we look at the steps and say how it works, and we look at the traditions and say why it works, and we look back at the steps again and say when it works. It works when we do step 9. That's when the power of this program really comes to life for us. And Sean was doing that, and I was so excited for him. In fact, I decided to send him $100 because I was so excited. So I wanted him to sense the spiritual power of what he was doing. And I sent him 100. And a couple weeks go by, he sends me another 5. And then I sent him another 100. And all of a sudden, the 5 started coming really fast. Step 10, I think, is a step that I like the most because it really allows me to know where the problem is. I always thought you were the problem. If you're the problem, there's no solution for me. You're not the problem. The Lutherans aren't the problem. The Republicans aren't the problem. The Arabians aren't the problem. I'm the problem. It's me and my attitudes. That's what the problem is. A couple lines in the literature I really like is, when I'm disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with me. And another one is, in the stories, is I need to concentrate, not what's wrong with the world, what's wrong with me and my attitudes. And I have the tools now to be able to do that. I think the most misquoted line that I hear in meetings is what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. That's not what it says. This is what we were like, what happened, what we're like now. It's like you go out to the corner here, there's a traffic signal. It goes green, yellow, red, green, yellow, red. It does it all day long, all night long, when you're sleeping, green, yellow, red. I pull up to the light, and it's red, and I got a story about it. I don't want it to be red. So the light has nothing to do with it. This is what it is. It's the story I bring to the light. It's like we bring our own weather to the picnic. When we change our mind about it, it's like change your mind, change your life. That's a lot more than just a bumper sticker. I know a guy that when he pulls up to a red light, he thanks God for his sobriety. Every red light is a chance to thank God for their sobriety. I know another guy that he closes his eyes for a second and tries to get in touch with his higher power. He says, they'll always let you know when the light's green. When you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. The whole world has changed because I've changed. It's an inside job. I'm looking at the world differently. And step 10 is the step that really allows me to do that. The literature says something about looking for fear, resentment, selfishness, and dishonesty. And those are all, I mean, fear is not getting my way in the future. Resentment's not getting my way in the past. And dishonesty is not getting my way now. So it's a relieving me of bondage of self thing. 11, I read something that I really liked. It says, sought, we say in the literature, sought through prayer and meditation. And this article I read said, sought by paying attention. When I pay attention, I'm where the power is. Because the power is right here, right now. It's not anyplace else. I love it at meetings. I go to a lot of topic meetings, and every meeting I go to, about halfway through, someone will be called on, they'll say, what's the topic? And I say, it's paying attention. That's always the topic. I don't know if you've heard this announcement like, now hear this, now hear this. I thought, that's not an announcement of something to come. That is the announcement. Now hear this. Now hear my heart. My heart, my head, and my feet are all in the same place. So now hear this. That's my new mantra. That's where the power is. That's the now. The wake doesn't power the boat, and the future doesn't even exist. It's now, and that's where God is. So if I can be now, if I can be present, I'm where the power is. And I, as a result of doing this work, I have this relationship with this power now that we call God. So. Step 12, I make a real effort to carry the message. I cram the message for a while. I had the opportunity last night to go out to Rockwood and carry the message locally to the guys there, and that was a real honor. And I love passing out CDs, and I thanks for the work that Roger does. And it's a great way to carry the message, to allow newcomers to hear our stories, and you know, when they're driving around. I think I'm a better driver on the freeway as a result of practicing these principles. I haven't missed my exit and chased somebody down for years wanting to teach them how to drive. I heard a story about Chuck Chamberlain that as he was getting older, somebody wanted to pick him up and take him to a meeting. He wanted to drive himself, and the person that was picking him up says, oh, it's a jungle out there, Chuck, you know. I needed to take you there. And said, Chuck says, I only have to drive the one car. I don't have to drive your car as well. I'll let you do that. But the main thing about 12 for me is that I've woke up. We have a saying that a lot of us use when we're getting loaded is we're stoned. I was a stone. I was like a walking dead person, a hollow dead person. I don't want to be that way anymore. I've woken up as a result of doing this work. And I believe my awakening is exemplified by a story I heard. And I'll back up a little bit. When I mentioned step 10, I didn't talk about the other part about it, is when we're wrong, promptly admitted it. And I think my awakening, a lot of it has been how wrong I was about things. And this little story kind of exemplifies it. It's about a woman who goes to the airport, and she's sitting waiting for her plane, and she's got a bag of cookies she's eating right by her side. She's reading a novel and eating cookies. And there's a man sitting in the seat on the other side. And she looks over, and he takes one of her cookies and eats it. And she's kind of shy, so she doesn't say anything. And she keeps reading, and she eats a cookie. And then he eats another cookie. And she thinks, man, this guy's rude. And gets down to one cookie. He takes it and breaks it in half and gives her half. And then her plane is called, and she jumps up, never saying anything to the guy, and gets on her plane, gets settled in, gets out her knapsack, gets out her novel, and there's her bag of cookies. She was eating his cookies. It's like, oh, I was wrong. I was wrong about that book. That's a fabulous book. I don't think anybody understands alcoholism, both the disease and the recovery, as well as Bill Wilson did. It's an amazing book. I was wrong about God. I thought God, but somehow I would lose myself. I ended up finding myself. Dependence upon this power allows me to be independent. I was wrong about those steps. I thought they were punishment somehow. They're the tools that I've used to change. I've changed. You've changed. We change as a result of doing this work. It's not by thinking about it. It's by taking action. I was wrong about gratitude. I thought, I got a pile here. I like this, but I don't like that. But I put, I don't like it. I put alcoholism in the I don't like pile. Well, really, that's the price I paid to be with you. It should be in the good pile. Alcoholism brought me to you. So I don't know which pile to put stuff in. So I have one pile. It's thank you, God. Whatever's in my life, it's thank you, God. I was wrong about forgiveness. I thought if I forgave you, somehow I was condoning your behavior. No, forgiveness is for me. It's what sets me free of the past. I don't have to live in the past anymore. And when I can forgive you, that allows you to forgive me. I realize that anything I want, I have to give away. I give away my sobriety, I have more. I give away my money, I have more. I give away my time, I have more. I give away my love, I have more. I thought I couldn't trust you. No, it was me I couldn't trust. I thought I wasn't getting enough love. No, I wasn't giving enough love. I was taking and taking and taking. Everything was gone. And now I give and give and give, and my life is so rich and so full. I had everything backwards. It's like there's a little thing called the set-aside prayer in the fourth step. It's like, let me set aside everything I think I know about the book, about the steps, about God, about you. Let me have a new experience. I don't know what I don't know, but I know there's things still that I don't know, and I don't know what I'm wrong about still. So I need to really keep an open mind. And that's my awakening that I said, oh, well, I had everything backwards. During the years that I've been sober, I spent at least 15 years teaching a DUI class and at least 15 years working in the prison system. And for a short period of time when I was going to college, I worked in a mortuary. So I know where alcoholics end up. And we call it the passing parade in AA. And I see sobriety it's like an escalator. And the escalator is going down, but I want to go up. And I'm on the escalator, but I've got to keep walking up or I go backwards. And there's no going backwards in AA. There's no coasting in AA. You're either going towards a drink or away from a drink. So I thought, you know, some people, it appears to me like they work the steps backwards. I just want to show you what I think that looks like real quick. 12. I have principles. It's dog-eat-dog world. If I don't get mine before you get it, it's not enough to go around. 11, I have a prayer. It's me, 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 more, 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 now, 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 amen. I take inventory of yours. 9, I'm not gonna pay the money back. I'm going to skip 9. 8, I got a list. It's a shit list, and your name's on it. 7, humility is not one of my faults, but if I had one, that's the one I'd choose. 6, I'm willing to do it my way. I love that Frank Sinatra song. I did it my way. 5, I'm not copying anything, even if you have pictures. 4, I can never get a break. It's like I live in this town called Pityville, population 1. It's like a shit fairy that follows me around, is always dumping on my head. I'm so unlucky. If I fell in a barrel of tits, I'd come out sucking my thumb. Three. Turn my will over to God? What if he screws my life up? Two. I have all these, I understand the inner workings of my mind so clearly now it would be impossible for me to have a drink. I have all this self-knowledge. One. I wonder if I quit too soon. I think I'll have a drink. When I have a drink, click, click. Handcuffs. When they put handcuffs on you, they're saying you can't even be trusted with your own hands. Go to jail, empty your pockets, sir. Here's my sobriety coin. I keep it with my money because when I don't have any sobriety, I don't have any money. And there's a little saying on the top of this is, to thine own self be true. I won't need that. I'll be lying to myself so fast that I don't have any need for that. Car keys. I have a little emblem of a camel. Camel starts to stay on its knees and goes 24 hours without a drink. House key. I was shitting in a bucket when I got sober. I didn't even have a house. I won't need that. Here's a coin I have that a friend gave me. I seek strength not to be greater than my brother, but to fight my greatest enemy, myself. Won't need that. Wedding ring, that'll come off. I'm a little chubby since I quit smoking 25 years ago, but price of gold, I'd probably be at least one good drunk when I get that off. Picture of my granddaughter. I won't be able to see her. She's a pistol, too. Driver's license, that's gone. Credit cards, I didn't have any of those. I could put my teeth out here, too, but that's not a good idea. Everything in my life that's good is a direct result of me being an Alcoholics Anonymous. You think I'd give that up for one drink? There's no way in the world I would give that up. These steps are so powerful. 1, 2, 3, give up. 4, 5, 6, clean up. 7, 8, 9, make up. 10, 11, 12, wake up. 1, 2, 3 gets me right with God. 4, 5, 6 gets me right with me. 7, 8, 9 gets me right with you. 10 gets me right with me again. 11 gets me right with God. 12 gets me right with you. It's a set of principles, spiritual in nature, when practiced as a way of life, allows me to be useful and happily whole. What a wonderful deal for a guy like me. You know, many times I've asked myself, and it's what David read, is like, what's the point? I've asked myself that when I'm drinking, and I've asked myself that in sobriety sometimes. What's the point? We have an answer in the literatures. The point is to be willing to grow along spiritual lines. Well, ask myself, what does that look like? Well, where to put your hands? You know, where do you? And I've been doing some reading about it, and I keep running across the same thing. Is the single best thing that we can do to grow spiritually is to be kind to each other. If you can't be kind to us, I hope you can be kind to yourself. Because if you can be kind to yourself, you can't help but be kind to us. That's how the world works. Thanks for letting me share.